Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you're tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggly.
Yeah, yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Was a kid, yeah. Keep your hands where they eyes can see, just wanna be free, but I can't breathe, all my paper legit, why you bothering me, your father to be, just trying to make it home to my seed, we need change and we thirsty, used to hit target on my birthday, didn't know I became a target on my birthday, one for the body count, and with the body cam, that's entertainment to the white man, favorite rapper was Jigga Man, back then, blueprint for a powerful black man,
somebody help me, cause I can't breathe. Somebody help me, no justice, no peace. Can somebody help me, cause I can't breathe. Can somebody help me, no justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace.
Somebody help me, cause I can't breathe. I can't breathe. No justice, no peace. Somebody help me. Cause I can't breathe. I can't breathe. No justice.
now tuned in live and direct for an exclusive interview of Off the Cuff Radio, episode 423. First of all, I want to give a big shout out to everybody that's tuned in to Off the Cuff Radio for the past 7 years. Thank you to everybody that subscribed to Screwball Radio. Big shout out to my co-host, Black Poet, and comment from Screwball Radio. You can check that out on Saturday nights. My other co-host, T-Max, with the facts, he wouldn't be able to make it here because this is an exclusive interview. And I also want to say big shout out to my co-host of Spirit, Illata Sandman, and Miss Chinchilla. And tonight's guest, man, this brother is very talented, man. He's bringing that great energy back in the R&B. Very diverse, very skillful. And he has a whole diverse range of projects coming, whatever it be from Hollywood, whatever he do with music. So without further ado, let's bring this brother on, Mr. Carlos Farr, y'all.
Yo, yo, what's up, bro?
How you doing, man?
No, I'm good, bro. Chilling.
That's what it is, man. First of all, I want to salute you for that track we just played, the No Justice, No Peace, man. That was a very powerful song, man.
Yo, I appreciate it, bro, for real.
Yeah, and it goes to show you right there that you in tune with what's going on. You in tune with the times, and you in tune with the people, most importantly. So that gives your music a very authentic look, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely, bro. You know, I always try to, with my music, I definitely try to create things that people can relate to, you know, what's going on in the world, and just, you know, something that's timeless. Like, you know, when people look back on it, they like, yo, you know what I'm saying? I remember what was going on around this time when it dropped.
Now, when you was going and making that record, did you go in with the mindset of making something like a What's Going On, like Marvin Gaye or some sort?
You know, it kind of just came to me. Shout out to my boy, Smitty. Smitty, the producer. He sent me the beat, and I was kind of just sitting on it because the beat was fire. And it wasn't really even, like, originally it was like a heartbreak song. But, you know, the George Floyd thing kind of happened. And, well, it did happen. It happened. And then, you know, it kind of, I was writing, wasn't on the track, and it kind of shifted. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, it just kind of just came, flowed. And that's kind of how I came up with it.
That's what it is. And not to mention, you had the dope visuals with it as well. So definitely, everybody, check that video out. Subscribe to his YouTube page. It's up there. Now, going on, before we get to the interview, man, I want to send a shout-out to everybody that's tuning in. And for people that's already tuned in and already has a clue of who you are, tell us what you got going on for the fall and the winter.
Right now, my next single, Leave You Alone, we're shooting that. And we're probably dropping it before the end of the year, you know, just to cap off the album. We're coming up on a one-year anniversary of the album. And I'm also working on a film right now called My Father's Keeper. I play a character by the name of Christopher. So, you know, we kind of just ending the year on that note. And I'm working on new music right now to drop next year for the album.
That's what it is. Now, for those who just tuned in and they just now get familiar with who you are, we're going to get into, like, your background, man. Tell us where you were born and raised, man.
I was born in Detroit, man. So I grew up with a very rich history of, you know, rhythm and blues, you know, being that Motown was based there. You know, my phone still listened to Motown artists. And that's just kind of how R&B came up for me. You know what I'm saying? I just grew up in it. You know, Detroit got a rich history of, you know, black rhythm and blues artists, like the greatest of all time, you know, Stevie Wonder. Marvin Gaye, you know what I mean, like all those people. So it was kind of just embedded in me growing up.
Yeah, man, I mean, that whole bloodline, like that whole Motown bloodline alone, I mean, the Supremes, the Temptations, the Jacksons, I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah, definitely. Jackson,
you to carry that tradition, man, it can't help but to rub off on you.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, at one point, at what point and what age was it like, I can do this, man? Like, let me go ahead and get my tab at it. Because, you know, it had to come like a point in your life where it was like, okay, I can go ahead and start singing myself.
So, like, my dad, he did music growing up, shout out to Pops. And it kind of rubbed off on me seeing him, I guess, you know what I mean? Like, seeing him with his band and going to the studio. And so I always sang and danced as a kid, you know, watching Michael Jackson, Prince, people like that. And as I got older, you know, people like Usher, Genuine, Justin Timberlake, those cats kind of were just coming out. And they kind of pushed me over the edge to just want to be like them. And mixing that in with my dad doing what he was doing. And when I was 11, he took me to the studio for the first time. And I had already been working on poetry and, you know, trying to just figure out how to write. And I recorded my first song when I was 11. And then from there, I kind of just stuck to it. We just kept going back to the studio. He kept kind of grooming me. And by the age of 13, I was definitely full-fledged in it, like, as an artist.
Now you care to tell people there's levels to when it comes to singing, but rapping is totally different. When it comes to singing, it's about having your voice pipes ready. It's about breath control. It's a whole lot to go with that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you got to do warm-ups. You got to take vocal lessons, man, to get better at all. Because there's always things, techniques you can learn to be better. I mean, rapping is the same in a way of, you know, exercising your brain to, you know, say conscious things and clever ways to say things. So I think they equally match as far as, you know, getting your point across. I would say the singing is definitely more so talent, though. Like, you know, you either can sing or you can't.
Right.
I think that a singer can improve in singing. You know, a good singer can always be better by taking vocal lessons and just working on the craft. A rapper, you can definitely, you know, you can start at whatever age in rap and just kind of work on yourself and to get better at rapping. Yeah, singing is more so like, I would say, I'm not saying rapping isn't a talent. That's a talent. Also, obviously, there are better rappers than others. Yeah, singing is definitely a, I would say, a gift that you either kind of have or you don't.
It's a sink or swim thing right there.
Yeah.
Now hold on right quick. I got my co-host T-Max on the line. What's good, brother?
What's going on, y'all? How y'all doing? How y'all doing?
Tonight.
Definitely, yes, definitely, definitely. Now, so I'm a little late coming in, but what's going on all? Yeah, man, I was listening to what you were saying about the gift of singing and whatnot, because a lot of people got to understand in terms of there's a lot of nuances in terms of it, in terms of having your runs, your vibrato, you know, your pitch. You know, and you definitely have to understand it. I mean, when you look at some of the great singers, you know, like, you know, Marvin Gaye, you know, who could have, like, who could sing in, like, different, you know, melodies and octaves. I mean, Mariah Carey, even Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses, whose vocal range is higher than, believe it or not, Mariah Carey's. I mean, you have Whitney Houston. You know, you have Barry White, you know, with the bass, you know, the baritone. You know, Prince. You know, it's just so many. In terms of it, when you're looking at it in terms of how important is it in terms of knowing how to compose the music that best suits your voice for what you're trying to convey out there?
I would say, so I write a lot of my own music. I do have writers I work mm-hmm. with, but I think definitely knowing what you want to say is the first, mm-hmm. You know, the first step. Like for me, my process is, like, I work with different producers, so they'll send me beats, and I kind of just listen and sit on the beat for a while. Like, you know, sometimes I get a beat where I'm just writing right off the bat, like, as soon as I hear it. But I like to, like, really figure out what the beat, what the music's trying to say first and let the music kind of guide me. That's what I did with No Dress with No Peace. Like, I started writing it. It could be a love song, like a heartbreak song, but it started talking to me in a different manner. That guitar in it kind of was like, all right, this would be, like, some... you know, some empowerment type music, basically. So for me, that's just kind of like, I let the music kind of tell me where to go vocally with it, whether to start in a falsetto or, you know, stay at the regular head voice or what octave to go in, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Now, in terms of being a guitar... Oh, go ahead, King. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's what we were talking about. Like, that goes to show you that he has a strong ear for music right there, because he originally said in the beginning of the interview that it was a breakup song, and he transitioned it to a protest song. That's a gift, like, that's a straight gift right there.
Yeah, in terms of how you make those changes of subjects and whatnot. Now, in terms of you being a dual talent, in terms of being a guitar player as well, who were some of the players growing up that influenced you to play?
I just started, like, working on guitar. I'm more of a piano, but I just started with guitar, like, maybe a year and a half ago. So I ain't that great.
Mm-hmm.
But Jimi Hendrix is definitely, like, the GOAT. Him and Prince.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Hendrix, I mean, when I tell anybody, if you want a quick lesson in terms of how great Hendrix was in terms of legendary, just listen to him at Woodstock 69 when he played the Star Spangled Banner. In terms of his chords and melodies that he played and his progressions, he did shit 50 years ago on that thing that musicians, accomplished musicians today, are still trying to figure out how he got those notes out of it the way that he did. And when you look at some of the players, so many over the years that were directly influenced or indirectly influenced. I mean, you look at players like Prince, Eddie Van Halen, Jimmy Page, Rocky George, you know, I mean, the list goes on. Eric Gales, you know, Robert Rudolph. It's the it's just so much. It's just so endless. In terms of it, who do you see today in the industry who pretty much replicates that level of acumen, both musically and vocally, in terms of composition and playing and vocal performance as well, dexterity?
For me, I think I definitely think that Bruno Mars is, like, probably the GOAT as far as my generation goes, like, out right now.
Yeah.
At that musical level. I've seen him in concert a few times. Justin Timberlake's pretty dope on you know, playing instruments and singing. Alicia Keys is great. Her is incredible.
yes, she is. Whew.
Yes. I mean, it's a few cats. I would say Usher and Beyonce are both equally as entertaining and electrifying on stage as them. But I don't see them play instruments too many times, so that's probably like my list for right now, like off the top of my head.
Definitely. How do you see the music being marketed today in terms of what it was from when you started? Well, from where you're doing now, I suppose, what you started seeing in terms of just how, you know, it's advertised, who's getting into the game, in terms of the talent level, this, that, and the other. One lament for some people, and, you know, King and myself, we speak on it sometimes off air and on air. It's like, is there just seems to be a defined difference now in terms of artists that are getting in the door that are being promoted than what it was back in the day in terms of the standard of talent?
Definitely, I think so. I mean, well, you know, marketing now these days is completely different. We got, you know, social media. We have, you know, the internet. So, it's a little different. It's a little easier to, I mean, I wouldn't say it's easier because it's very oversaturated also. But I think just with social media, it's opened the door for a lot of people to kind of at least be seen.
Right.
And so with that being, and it being oversaturated, it's definitely different marketing now. Like back in the day, you know, like I've toured with Ginuwine for years. I think if this was 15 years ago, me touring with Ginuwine, I would definitely lead to a record deal. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, it's a little different now. Like, I've been touring it for years. I've gotten record deal offers, but not to one of my likeness. And it's just, I don't know, man. This is different. It's just different now. definitely got to have a passionate love for it now.
Definitely. Let's visit that for a second, what you said about the deals that you even offer, because King and myself, we've always talked about on this show, when we talk with hundreds of artists throughout our time doing this, what do artists need to understand in terms of when a deal comes and what is good for them and what is not good for them to sign?
I think 360 deals are, you know what, let me actually dig deeper into this. So I think that it's an even exchange now. You need the label to kind of get you out there to get to that bigger stage. So what you want to do is you want to build a catalog of all your own stuff.
Right.
As many albums as you can, get the label's attention, and then once you get the label's attention, I would say sign a deal. Sign a one-album, two-album deal so they can put you in a position to be seen at that level that you maybe couldn't get to as an indie artist. And then once you get out the
right.
deal, you know, you do your one, two albums, you out the deal, now you can, you know, do your music at your level. Kind of similar to what Tory Lanez did. You know what I mean? Like, that to me is the easiest and beneficial way for an artist to, you know, to capitalize off the label. And, you know, you give the label one or two albums, but it's a fair exchange because now you're at that level to where you don't even need the label, and they put you in that position so
right.
they can have, you know, they can have a one or two albums. They can have a master to those if they need, they want them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't be going in. Yeah, that's some good advice right there. Like, don't be going in signing a seven album deal.
Yeah. A lot of cats, you know, they want to. Well, I mean, a lot of labels are getting smarter now. Like, they are figuring out that that's what artists are doing. But you know, I feel like it's a fair change. You know what I mean? And the only reason why it's beneficial now is because of the internet. You know what I mean? Like, you got people like Usher, Sierra. They're not signed to labels, but they have that body of work. And put in so many years that now they don't even need a label. Like, they can put out records on their own and do numbers. You know what I mean? Like, we all know who they are. Once people know who you are, you really don't need a label because you're gonna make your money and it's gonna be all in house. So I want two albums for sure. Let's do it. You know what I mean? Get your awards, your Grammys, and then you the rest of your life you making music doing what you love, doing concerts, and people know who you are.
Now, talk about stage performance. Like, that's very vital when it comes to elevating your brand. As how did you, like, what sort of element did you bring with your stage show that differs from a lot of your peers?
Man, I've always been a performer. So, like, that's, like, my favorite thing about being an artist. I really take it serious, you know what I mean? So I put in well over 10,000 hours of, you know, rehearsing. I'm from the old school, like, so I'd be in the mirror, you know, dancing, sweating, you know what I'm saying, doing talent shows for the family every Friday, you know what I'm saying, watching, studying people like Usher, Chris Brown, you know, people like that, Marianne. Like, I think that it's way more exciting in a live show when you got somebody that can perform rather than just, you know the words of their song. So it's very important because once you can sell the song on stage, people are going to always want to see you. Like, they're going to always remember that. So every time you're in a city, they come in to buy tickets to see you because you gave them an experience. It wasn't just a concert.
Yeah, and I can say this from experience in terms of having seen a great stage show years ago. He's wild, he's nutty, he says crazy, you know, things at times. But the first time I saw Kanye perform in 2004, and this is like, you know, college dropout Kanye. This is like starting out Kanye.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like Kanye's stage show then was unbelievable, you know, and it was just him and the DJ, and Kanye just rocked it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at it, I mean, we give our, you know, we got, and part of what we do on the show is we like to give our audience a little bit of history in terms of how some of the shows used to be. I mean, back in the day, you know, even though Hammer had situations were kind of crazy for him at the end. One thing about Hammer he was known for in his heyday, Hammer stage shows were legendary.
Yeah, I heard he would outdo, when he first started, he would outdo the opener. I mean, the main act, so. Until
yeah,
the movie, he had to give him his own main act.
They had got mad at him. They were like, "Ham, you need to turn that down." Because, and Ham like, "Look, I can't go half throttle. I gotta go full throttle. They gotta keep up with me."
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that's how it was. I mean, the VH1 movie was a little cheesy, but that scene in terms of when he talked about it, you know, and his character talked about how, you know, I can't go halfway, you know, and I mean, he was going up there like King said. He was blowing away the main show. Like, I mean, it was like they had already got all their money for the opening act. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, so it's definitely something in terms of it. Now, in terms of what it is to be an artist, what do people have to understand about you know, the perseverance, you know, the time it takes, and really understanding your audience in terms of who you're trying to reach with your music. We live in a culture today. Oh, go ahead, please, please, because I'll go on.
Hold on, you got your
please.
So I would say, firstly, having a solid team and understanding that everything is a process. Like, it's going to take time. You know, you got to put in your 10,000 hours. There are no shortcuts. You know, a lot of people think that because of the internet, there are, but there aren't. You know what I mean? Like, you really can't. Right now, in the music business, everything is about, well, at least the labels and things that matter, streams and shows. How many tickets can you sell at a show? That's really all it's about right now. You know what I mean? Like, if you can't sell out a show or bring these many heads or, you know, people not listening to you, then it's really all the other stuff you're doing to labels or the people at that level, they're not really checking for you. You know what I mean? So you got to, in order to get to that level, you just got to keep putting in the work. You can't try to cheat the system.
Yeah.
Speaking of putting in work, man, we want to talk about what it was like recording your debut album, Your Baby, the Carlos Farrar story.
Yeah. So that was a process because in the middle of that, I actually had started off in China. I was doing a few shows over there. I was touring over there.
Oh wow!
I had a residency at this nightclub, and then during the week and on the weekends, I would just do the different cities outside of the, basically around China and like different countries in China. I'm sorry. Different countries in China, right? Yeah. All right. Different cities, right. No, because I think, like, China is a, right. All right, you're right. Never mind. Shut up, Carlos. Anyway, yeah. So
it's all good.
I would do, like, Beijing. I would do Shanghai. I would do just different cities around the nightclub. And through that experience, that really helped up. I mean, I was always performing, but that, like, I was performing, like, 7 days a week over there. So, like, it was, like, a whole different level of being on it. You know what I mean? Like, you had to really be on it. And so that kind of set me up for when I got back. I went on the Ice Cream Man tour with Ginuwine. We co-headlined it. And then we had openers in every city. But basically, that kind of, during that whole process, I was recording my album. And it was dope because I got to put a lot of the experiences I went through during that 3-4 year period onto the album.
And what's it like, you know, in terms of having that exposure going overseas? Because a lot of people don't know, and you had a residency, so that means, like, you were contracted specifically to perform there, and that's huge. I mean, you know, shout out to Rick Rawson and G the Whole Click. I got his book, and he was talking in his book about how before the COVID thing really hit full blast, he had a Vegas residency set up. You know, Celine Dion, she had her Vegas residency there. You know, Mariah, I think Toni Braxton, I think they had Vegas residencies. How big is that whenever you are booked exclusively to do shows at a certain venue?
It's guaranteed money for sure. But it also, you know, it shows that they believe in what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, they think that you're of value. So for me, it was just an honor. You know what I mean? Like, it was a great experience. I'm not really a fan of China so much. You know what I mean? Like, the government and how they move over there. But the experience was a blessing because not a lot of people are going to ever get to do that. So, and it showed me different cultures. Like, it made me appreciate where I'm from a lot more, too. So, yeah, it was dope. If you could definitely get, I mean, I think as an artist, it definitely levels you up, though. Like, it takes you to the next level when you're doing the show every night and everything, and you got to get that same energy every night because it's a whole different group of people, you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like touring, but this is the same. People coming to you, basically.
Yeah. You know,
you had one of them experiences where the, you know, women gave you the Michael Jackson treatment where they just fell out. You know what I'm saying? When you pull up on stage.
touring with Ginuwine, it was a lot of that, bro. Like, women was doing some crazy stuff. I actually got like three bras I kept. The first one ever thrown at me was during that tour. I kept the last one that was thrown at me because it was like the last show. And then it was one in a specific city, Albuquerque, I think. That was like my favorite city that we did. So I kept the bra that got thrown at me at that show too. But yeah, man, yeah, it just crazy on the road. Man.
Had a
That's wild,
out,
man. That's crazy. And I mean, you know, the funny thing about it is in terms of doing shows, people got to understand, you know, that's the culmination when you put on a good show of everything that you worked for to get there. You know, we live in a culture today where everybody, you know, gets on social media doing music and everybody trying to say, you know, you hating, if you don't like my shit, you're not supporting. One thing, you know, King and myself have already said on this show is, you know, and the guests that we've had have always said, you know, your fans, if your music is good, it will stand up on its own. You know what I'm saying? You know, your people, the people will find you. And it's not always about people. People got to get out their feelings trying to say that it's some type of conspiracy out to sabotage their movement if somebody doesn't like it. Music is subjective, which is an art.
Exactly.
Art is subjective. People are going to like it or they're not going to like it. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you're shitty because people don't like it. But it doesn't mean that you're great because everybody likes it. It just, there's a difference between being great at what you do and being popular. Go ahead, King. Go ahead.
And, man, these dudes had it. I mean, I'm telling you, man, the talent, they got it good because imagine take your demo to one of these offices, like, you know, Puffy's office or Snoop's office, and then you find your demo in the trash.
Yeah, it was different back in the day. That's what I'm saying, man. But, I mean, like, culture now is so sensitive to a lot of things. You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of, you know, everybody walking on AXL, don't want to say the wrong thing. You know, we didn't kind of, the generation I grew up in was kind of like the last generation where, you know, we knew what it was like with our cell phones and, you know, we had the best music, 90s music. It was just a different time. And now everything is, like, super hypersensitive. So you got to, they wouldn't have survived. They wouldn't have survived.
You got to move a quarter.
You had to have thick skin. Yeah, you got. We had thick skin, and now you gotta have thick skin in order to get to that next level, or you know, and they seem like they don't.
Definitely. Now, as being an artist, branding, how important is it to cultivate an image that is appealing and commercially viable to the masses?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that one more time?
I said, in terms of branding, how important is it in terms of cultivating an image that is commercially viable and profitable to the masses in terms of people really being able to deal, you know, like you as a person and really are going to buy into what you're selling with your product?
Well, I think now it all ties in. So, like, social media, getting on lives all the time with your fans, talking to them, okay, so you got to sell this light. You got to be a certain way on social media, and you got to let people see that, and you got to live that lifestyle so they believe the music that you're talking about. You know what I mean? This is one kid out right now. I can't think of her name. I'm thinking her name is Olivia Rodriguez or something like that, but all her songs are, like, really sad. She just won the MTV Award. I think she won the Best New Artist, but, like, even her lifestyle was kind of like a teenage girl who had her heart broke. Like, you can tell. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like you got to kind of sell the whole shebang now. It can't just be like how you look anymore. It has to be like your lifestyle and how you look. It has to all fit. Kind of like what rappers do. You know what I mean? Like, if they talking about what they doing or they talking about having all this money, they got to be on social media with a bunch of money. They got to have nicest cars. It all ties in. It has to be that. But not just in videos. Now it has to be all the time. So it's actually added pressure.
You know, and what you said is a real point because we have a showbiz saying about being on, and a lot of people, you know, we've seen, you know, because everybody's looking at a situation where they're always like, even when, you know, I think that's one of the hardest things about being an artist because everybody expects you to be on all the time in terms of you being this personality where people forget at times you're a real person, you know, you have a real life outside of your profession. Sometimes you just want to chill. You don't want to ill. So when everybody sees you, it's like everybody expects this certain image of you.
You got to turn it up.
24 hours a day. Yeah. Exactly. But I think social media made it that way. It's just social media.
Mm-hmm.
Even Superman take days off. He got to put his cape up sometimes.
Yeah, what he said. How dangerous is it when we're getting into the more unsavory elements of the street life where we see some artists out there, because we've seen some recent situations over the past year with artists who really tried to perpetrate. They were really out their gully, and then when they got by the laws or just the streetlight, they realized, you know, whether alive or dead, how real it is once things turn sideways. Do you find some artists get caught up in the act and they end up getting into something psychologically that they can't separate themselves from?
I think so. I mean, I guess with the whole 6ix9ine thing, I guess that would be the perfect example. You know, I don't really think the kid's a thug or into that lifestyle. I think he got tied in with the wrong people, and then stuff, you know, stuff got real. So I think it happens a lot, though, in the music business, like with a lot of people. I'm going to be 100% with you. I don't really believe, you know, Tupac was a stand-up guy, and he was real, and he was very he wore his heart on his sleeve. Like, he said what he felt, you know what I mean? Do I think that
right.
he didn't grow up a thug, though? Like, he didn't grow up like that. You know what I mean? Like, I seen his story. You know what I'm saying? We all seen his story. We all seen, you know, he grew up in the hood and stuff like that, but he wasn't a gangster. Like, he wasn't in, he didn't belong to gangs and stuff like that. He didn't get like that until he moved out to the West and he got with Suge towards the end of his career. But I don't think he even wanted to be wrapped up in that. I think he just wanted to do music. So, you know what I mean? Like, and I think once it was too late, he was in it. It was too late. Like, he had to, you know what I'm saying? Like, he had to kind of be that. Because he was already wrapped up in it. I think it just got the best of him, and obviously we see the result of that, but I think it happens a lot.
Yeah.
In a lot of scenarios.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing... It is.
Right. Same with Biggie. Biggie said it. He denounced it. He said, no, you know, I ain't in no gang. I don't, you know, I sold drugs, but I'm not a gang banger. I don't, you know what I mean? So, it just is, you know, these guys get into the game, and they, you know, they got the wrong people around them. That's really what it be.
Yeah, you know, and the selling point is so different now, you know, from what we've seen in the business today, because when we look at how it was back in the day, number one, there really wasn't social media, so it was pretty much an element of, you know, you really, you know, if you said something, I mean, you know, when we had DJ Yellow on the show last week, and he talked about NWA, you know, and how, you know, the image that they, you know, perpetrated, you know, they were really being street reporters, but the image that they cultivated behind being anti-establishment was just so, I mean, larger than life. I mean, songs like Fuck the Police and all that, it was just wild, and we were like, whoa. But it's like, you know, and we can say this on air because we know that, you know, everybody knows that, you know, Not Easy was a real gangbanger. Shout out Kelly Park, Compton Crip. Q, you know, came from a, you know, middle-class household, you know, he was a hell of a writer, though, in terms of having a penchant for being able to depict those images so vividly. But, you know, in terms of it, but it's funny when you look at NWA across the board for all the things that they said on albums, you never really heard about them getting in any, you know, heavy, heavy street drama like that. You know what I'm saying? In terms of, like, shootouts or, you know, this, that, and the other.
Anything, the problems start when you get signed.
Yeah.
Because it goes from, okay, you're at the street level and the hood messing with you, and everybody in the streets messing with you, but then the label takes you to the next level to where you're being seen, so your enemies know where you at. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's different. It brings on envy, a lot more envy. And I'm speaking on that from a rap game, though. You know, I ain't a rapper, so I don't, you know. But off from what I can see in, you know, everybody else's story, that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
You know.
And I will say, you know, I mean, going back to your craftsmanship and everything like that. Now, you do your own videos, too, right?
I do. Yeah, I write the treatments for them. I don't shoot them, but I definitely write the treatments for them.
Gotcha. Yeah, gotcha. Now, is that ever going to be transitioning into possibly movies in the future?
Well, I'm working on a film right now called My Father's Keeper.
Wait.
I play a character by the name of Christopher, and we're shooting that right now. It should be out probably top of the either late next year or early 2023. But, it's actually a pilot. Hopefully to get it picked up by Netflix, and we can keep rocking out, you know, season after season, Lord willing. But I've been acting for a while. I've done a few commercials with Captain College Coke, So that's definitely another passion of mine that I take very serious, and I put the work into, because, you know, acting is, it's not just get on camera and act. It's like you got to embody the character that you're playing, and you got to translate that character to the viewers.
Yeah, man.
People don't understand, you know, the work of the acting thing too, man. We hope we see you getting them Oscars.
Look, Academy,
yeah, man, it's a whole different,
you know,
game.
Emmy,
that's a whole different, that's a whole different animal.
Yeah, man. But one thing about it is, how important is it to you as an artist to maintain your creative vision and not be compromised by currency or what have you, in terms of, you know, just what people try to dangle in front of you, saying this is what you got to do in their eyes to become, you know, this major player?
It's super important to me. You know, I'm never going to sell myself out. I'm not going to name no names, but I think it's pretty ridiculous that they got this kid doing all the stuff he's been doing for attention, and rather him just, you know, let his talent speak for itself. It could
right.
be him, or it could be other people pulling the strings telling him to do this, but it's just, I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah,
I never do that.
Yeah,
like
we know who you're talking about.
Like, you know what I'm saying? I never sell myself out like that. I just feel like it's, you know, and I have no problem with, I have no problem with people that, you know, people's sexuality is their sexuality. I have no problem with that. I am a Christian. I do believe in God. So that when people start to play with that type of stuff, it kind of, to me, is disrespectful.
Yeah.
For the sake of attention, it goes too far for me. So I would never compromise my integrity or myself. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna do what I need to do. If it's meant for me to be at that the ultimate level, then I'm gonna get there, because it's already written. If it's not, then I'm still gonna, you know, it wouldn't be in my heart. So I'm gonna still try to do what I love to do what I do. So I'm gonna keep doing it the way I want to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, gay or straight, you know, no matter who the artist, gay or straight, we've had gay artists like Freddie Mercury of Queen, you know, George Michael, rest in peace, Elton John. You know, these were immensely talented artists who their talent spoke for themselves. You know, they didn't need a gimmick, you know, or flashiness or a whole bunch of over-the-top stunts. I mean, these are artists
yeah.
that are beloved by every, you know, nationality and race and, you know, in the world, you know, you know, and it's just like to lower yourself to doing stunts just for attention, you know, is like, okay, like you said, is this person really this how they are, or is there somebody behind them suggesting all this, and this person is so determined, desperate to be famous, that they're just going to go along with it. I don't think gay or straight, you should sell yourself out. If you're gay, you have a right to live your truth and do what you do. You know, if you're straight, you know, you live your truth. But don't ever let somebody put you in a position, no matter what your lifestyle is, that you're not comfortable doing it. You know, but it's the price of fame.
I think he plays on that. Like, people are attacking him because he is gay, and it's like, that's not why people have a problem. That's not the problem. The problem is you're doing the most. You know what I mean? Like, and it's disrespectful to a point. So that's, and you know, I think he's flipping it on that, and it's like, yeah, dude, that's not even an issue. But, you know.
You know, but even if we look at it, you know, y'all, from a sexuality and just in a broader level, well, like I said earlier, it's not attacking you if people don't like what you do or they don't like your music. And people got to understand, this is not personal. People have a right to say what they don't like and what they are not comfortable or pleased seeing. And that is not attacking.
Yeah.
That's called people, you know, people don't necessarily, when they want to see you do music, they want to see you do music and they want your talent to shine. They don't want to see a situation where you're doing a whole bunch of nonsense to overcompensate for the fact that maybe there's something lacking somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly what it was. Yeah, but
you got to deliver the content. Got to hit. It got to live up to the hype.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, most definitely. you know, but that's something that I think people really, you know, but I think artists have to understand that too, in terms of before you commit yourself to this, that you have to know that you got something special out there, because the one thing about it is, you know, and especially this day and time now, the public can be very fickle. Either they're going to like it or they won't like it, you know, and then you can be quickly forgotten about if they're not really into it.
Especially if the man has, it's slowly turning his back on him, because the man has a humongous amount of followers on Twitter and Instagram, but the numbers ain't even showcasing that. It's not really a reflection of his followers. And that's another thing, too, that people got to understand, that followers don't really mean nothing to a degree.
Man, listen, they don't. They really don't. They see it and not like it, you know. You got people that just follow you just to follow you sometimes.
I looked at it like, man, if you had about 12, 13 million followers, at least I would do is half of that. At least 5 million records sold.
Yeah, but it's not, because they're not watching for the music. They're watching it for the answers.
Yeah, but that's something where it becomes very dangerous. Yeah, when you're relying on antics. But, you know, we've talked about this on the show plenty of times. You know, a big social media following does not always translate to real sales in music or shows. You know, I got to watch it, because my people keep telling me about it. Shout out to HBO for doing this documentary last year, I believe, where they talked about how people cook the books on their social media with these bots and all of that to make it look like they're more than what they are. You know,
that backfires on you, because you're giving a look, but you're actually putting out more money just to maintain a certain image, rather than having a, you know, genuine support base.
Yeah, man. So in terms of you doing your music, who would you like to work with down the line, you know, or who, you know, in terms of who would you like to collaborate with? You know, and in terms of, you know, just, you know, what are your goals as you continue on this journey?
I would definitely love to collaborate with her. I really would like to work with Pharrell and Timbaland. You know, this is like two people that I really admired growing up, their production. Usher, you know what I mean? Bruno. And as far as me, man, I'm just working on my album right now, you know, just getting it ready for next year. And we're going to push this last single, Leave You Alone, off the album that's currently out. And that's pretty much it, man.
Word.
That's what it is, man. Now, you know, we about to wrap this up shortly, man. Tell people where they can find your music, where they can follow you.
Everything on social media and everything online is just Carlos Farrar, KarlosFarrar. And, I'm on Twitter, Carlos Farrar, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Apple Music, Spotify. Everything is just my name, my legal name. So easy to find me. And that's pretty much it with that.
Oh, yeah, one more question, because I just found this out on my IG right here. I'm going to ask this to both of y'all. This is a trick question here. Now, if this versus were to take place, who you pick, David Ruffin or Eddie King Jr.?
Oh, man.
I'm picking David Ruffin, because that's what I'm saying. You know, I got to rep for the home team, so that's just, you know, I got to stick with the home team.
Oh, yeah, that's
the Eddie, Eddie
Motown,
was a bad,
right?
Was a bad dude, though. Eddie was a bad dude, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, David was special, man. I mean, there's just no way around it, you know. I mean, you know, he was crazy, you know, but David, they ain't no denying that boy talent. David could get down with it.
Yeah, he was definitely one of the greatest to ever do it, man. But you know what, we're about to wrap this up, man. I want to send a big shout out to Angela. Well, making this thing happen, one of the hardest working publishers out there. And big salute to you, man, because you keeping that R&B brand, that bird flowing in the sky, man, because it's a lot. I feel that the art form has been abandoned, and you breathing life back into that.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man, for real. Thank you.
Definitely, we thank you.
So, yeah, man, so on that note, we about to sign up out of here. Thank you, bro, for joining us, man. Look for that album to drop the end of this year. You're welcome to come back anytime you want to promote it or send us any material.
Definitely.
So, yeah, we out of here, man.
I
better get that album, and don't bootleg it either.
Yep. All right, and on that note, we is out. Peace and God bless. One.